In a world where negotiation happens thousands of times daily, from billion-dollar mergers to bedtime battles with toddlers, Stuart Diamond's groundbreaking approach has quietly revolutionized how we get what we want. Getting More isn't just another business book. It's the culmination of Diamond's work teaching 30,000-plus people in 45-plus countries to achieve dramatically better outcomes in every interaction. Unlike traditional negotiation tactics based on power plays, Diamond's method focuses on understanding people's perceptions and emotions. The results speak for themselves. His students have collectively saved or earned over $3 billion using these techniques. Even Oprah Winfrey featured Diamond's work, calling it life-changing, while companies like Google and Microsoft have made his method standard practice. What makes this approach so powerful? It works because it addresses how humans actually behave, not how we wish they would behave, a distinction that transforms everyday interactions into opportunities for meaningful connection and mutual gain. The most critical factor in any negotiation is understanding the pictures in the heads of the other parties at that specific moment. Traditional approaches focus first on issues, here's my proposal, or interests, why do you want this deal? But Diamond argues you must start with understanding how the other person feels and thinks right now. Research shows that less than 10% of agreements depend on substance, while over 50% depends on the people involved, whether they like and trust each other. This principle was dramatically illustrated during the O.J. Simpson trial. Despite overwhelming DNA evidence, the prosecution failed because the jury neither liked nor trusted them, so they literally didn't hear the evidence presented. The human connection matters enormously. People are nearly 6 times more likely to help you, 90% versus 16, when treated as individuals rather than transactions. Consider Aliza Zaidi's experience. By noticing an airline gate agent's cough and offering water and cough drops with genuine concern, she received an exit row seat, free meal, and headsets on an overbooked flight. This wasn't manipulation, but authentic human connection. Even in business settings, understanding the invisible third parties influencing your counterpart can be game-changing. When a client claimed his company thought fees were too high, salesman Anand Iyer requested to speak directly with the specific people concerned. He discovered they merely wanted progress on some front, allowing him to maintain his fees while offering public relations work instead. This approach extends to valuing the other person's position and power. A student received a 14% nice guy discount simply by acknowledging a sales clerk's difficult day. When Diamond approached a taxi blocking traffic with, "Do you have to be so macho?" he failed, but succeeded when he valued the driver's professional status. Between you and his other car, you're the only professional driver here. The key is genuine sincerity. You must truly value the other person's perspective. Trust creates enormous benefits in negotiations. Faster deals, more successful transactions, and significantly better outcomes for all parties. Research demonstrates that its absence carries substantial economic costs. Studies across multiple countries show that nations with low trust environments have measurably lower employment rates, reduced GDP growth, and fewer international business partnerships. At its core, trust means feeling secure that others will protect your interests, with honesty and transparency serving as its fundamental components. Mitchell Marks, the former NYMEX chairman who revolutionized energy trading by inventing energy futures contracts, consistently attributed his remarkable success to a simple principle: always leaving money on the table. His reputation for trustworthiness brought him an abundance of deals that closed faster than his competitors. His approach proved that short-term profit sacrifices often lead to long-term relationship gains. Trust varies significantly across cultures and business environments, but its absence invariably carries heavy costs. A stark example occurred when Russian banking scandals in the late 1990s caused U.S. investment to dramatically plummet, from 28% to 2.9% of world totals, demonstrating how quickly trust can evaporate and its devastating economic consequences. While trust is highly advantageous, it isn't absolutely essential for successful negotiations. What's truly critical is securing commitment. Trust represents just one pathway to ensure commitment. Other mechanisms include detailed contracts, trusted third-party intermediaries, and carefully structured incentives. The crucial insight is securing commitment through methods that align with how the other party traditionally makes and honors commitments, rather than imposing your own cultural preferences. In China, for instance, traditional companies often view contract prices as guidance rather than absolute, but respond strongly to public endorsements from community elders because maintaining face holds paramount importance. When trust is absent, negotiators can create mechanical substitutes that provide similar security. These include escrow accounts, staged payment structures, or incremental exchanges, where each step delivers sufficient value to both parties. As Ronald Reagan famously quoted in diplomatic negotiations, "Trust, but verify." This approach acknowledges trust's value while recognizing the need for concrete verification mechanisms. Cheating, or even the mere perception of dishonesty, inflicts permanent damage to professional and personal reputations. Martha Stewart's legacy, despite her numerous business achievements, remains permanently linked to her conviction. Similarly, lawyers who overbill even once often find themselves permanently labeled as untrustworthy within their professional community. High-profile athletes like Michael Phelps and Tiger Woods lost millions in sponsorship deals from single incidents that damaged public trust. The cost of lost trust manifests in multiple ways: direct financial losses, damaged reputation, diminished credibility, and severely compromised negotiating effectiveness in future dealings. Trust can be rebuilt, but the process demands extraordinary patience and unwavering persistence. A compelling example involves a chemical company sales representative who made monthly visits for 6 years before regaining even minimal business from a client who felt deceived in a previous transaction. Successfully rebuilding trust requires multiple elements: sincere apologies, concrete promises to improve backed by specific actions, genuine openness to change, and consistent demonstration of collaborative problem-solving abilities over an extended period. Misperception and miscommunication constitute the greatest barriers to successful negotiation worldwide. When people look at the same situation but perceive entirely different things, conflict inevitably follows. These perception differences stem from our unique values, emotional makeup, selective information gathering, and biased memory. The fundamental challenge is that people aren't being difficult or unreasonable, they genuinely cannot see what you see. To persuade someone with different perceptions, you must start with their perception, not your facts, a counterintuitive but essential approach. To close perception gaps, first recognize they occur constantly. Question language to ensure shared meaning, as when Jocelyn at J.P. Morgan discovered her niece's request for 2 stories was really about story length, not quantity. When conflicts arise, systematically analyze. What am I perceiving? What are they perceiving? Is there a mismatch? Why? Ask questions before making statements. Where are you going? I'm going to New York. Gets heard better than reversing those sentences. Questions gain information without committing you to positions, while statements make you a target. When a broker complained about high insurance prices, Tim McClurk discovered the real concern was looking good to customers, allowing him to create a blended solution with additional services. We miscommunicate because we assume knowledge the other person doesn't have, as demonstrated by the Columbia classroom exercise where simple directions to Broadway required multiple clarifying questions. Effective communication requires always communicating, listening and asking questions, valuing rather than blaming, summarizing often, practicing role reversal, remaining dispassionate, articulating goals clearly, being firm without damaging relationships, noticing small signals, discussing perceptual differences, understanding their commitment process, consulting before deciding, focusing on what you can control, and avoiding right-wrong debates. contrary to conventional wisdom, you should communicate with the other party even if you dislike them. Not talking signals you don't value them enough to listen, leaving only poor alternatives: no agreement, litigation, or conflict. Talking demonstrates strength, not weakness. Even bitter enemies should communicate. When faced with difficult negotiators, using established standards can be remarkably effective. This powerful tool involves invoking the other party's own criteria, promises, or guarantees to achieve your goals. Whether it's a student using McDonald's freshness guarantee to get fresh fries minutes before closing time, or using a company's service promises to resolve issues, standards provide objective criteria that even the most resistant counterparts find difficult to dismiss. A standard is any practice, policy, or reference point that gives a decision legitimacy, whether it's a company policy, previous statement, promise, or guarantee. People hate contradicting themselves, so when given a choice between consistency with their standards or hypocrisy, they usually choose consistency. This psychological principle makes standards incredibly effective in negotiations, especially with service providers who have explicit service guarantees. When applying standards in negotiations, the key is giving people a choice between being extreme or meeting your goals. For example, when confronted with $150 in undisclosed hotel phone access fees, asking, "Is it your policy to charge customers for things you have not first notified them about?" forces the manager to either admit to breaking the law or waive the charge. This approach works best with a calm, sweet tone and when done privately, as asking for exceptions publicly makes it a bigger decision for the other party. Rather than accepting compromise, like the hotel manager's offer to split the difference at $75, standards-based questions like, "If I'm right, I owe nothing. If I'm wrong, I owe $150. Where does $75 come from?" are more effective. Breaking negotiations into multiple small steps is essential for success. Most unskilled negotiators ask for too big a leap at once. "My computer is broken, give me a new one," making it easy for others to refuse. Instead, divide the process into smaller increments, getting buy-in at each step and building a foundation for the next. Start with what's familiar to the other party, their own standards and values, and proceed gradually toward your goal. Rocky Motwani demonstrated this at the DMV when facing a "no personal check" sign. By incrementally establishing that personal checks were accepted by mail to the same building, even the same desk 6 feet away, he successfully paid by check when thousands of others couldn't. Trading items of unequal value is a powerful negotiation tool that creates more value for all parties. This concept works because different parties value things differently. What costs you little might be highly valuable to someone else. The basketball tickets that closed a multi-million-dollar paper contract illustrate this principle perfectly. By finding what's in the pictures in their heads, understanding what others truly value, you can trade items that have different worth to each party. Matt Rogers of Tyco convinced a British company to pay Tyco to take a subsidiary off their hands rather than selling it for £3 million. By discovering the British company's urgent need to divest within 3 weeks to avoid violating bank agreements, Matt offered to fast-track the acquisition in exchange for getting the subsidiary for free, saving Tyco £3 million while saving the British company from potentially losing their entire £30 million enterprise. Even small trades can have outsized impacts, like giving a purchasing manager a hotel recommendation that costs nothing but adds value to your business relationship. The key is finding what others value, whether it's in the deal or completely unrelated. Intangibles, non-monetary elements that have specific value to others, are crucial in trading items of unequal value. These can range from arranging a round of golf that secured airline seats from Air Canada to negotiating a later bedtime for a child in exchange for safety rules. The human economic system began with trading unequal items, excess meat for bread. And while money standardized exchange, it can't replace specific intangibles that individuals uniquely value. Rather than focusing on abstract interests, consider specific goals and the underlying needs they satisfy. When salary increases aren't possible, companies might fulfill your real goal of a better life through co-signing loans, offering vacation time for consulting, or providing cheaper travel options. Beyond rational needs, understanding emotional and irrational needs, fears of heights or crowds, dreams of travel or sailing, expands negotiation possibilities. In family-owned businesses, representing 90% of global businesses, founders often request outrageous prices but actually want intangibles like respect, keeping the brand name, or having their picture displayed in the lobby. Money is rarely the most important factor for either side, despite what they claim. Emotion is the enemy of effective negotiation. Emotional people stop listening, become unpredictable, and lose focus on their goals, ultimately harming themselves. While movies glorify impassioned speeches, real effectiveness depends on clear thinking. The distinction is crucial. Emotion means being overcome by your own feelings, while empathy means focusing on others' feelings. One can be dispassionate and compassionate simultaneously. Emotions in negotiations are triggered by lies, threats, unfairness, broken commitments, and dashed expectations. When people become emotional, they shift from pursuing goals to seeking punishment and revenge. This destroys negotiations, limits creativity, clouds judgment, and leads to poor decisions. Threats are among the least effective negotiation strategies, despite their popularity. Studies show people who threaten are only half as likely to reach agreements as those who don't. Threats make people emotional and less resistant to self-harm, causing them to care less about consequences. The take-it-or-leave-it approach similarly backfires. In one study, when subjects were offered an unfair split of $10, $9, $1, 75% rejected the offer, preferring nothing over perceived unfairness. A better approach is collaborative threats, reframing the same message as a shared problem. I really like you guys, but competitors are offering more value. We'd like to stay with you. What should we do? This preserves the relationship while opening space for creative solutions. If you become emotional during negotiation, you're no good to anyone. Like surgeons who must remain dispassionate yet empathetic, effective negotiators must control their emotions. When feeling upset, take a break until calm returns or consider bringing in another negotiator. Thorough preparation serves as defense against losing focus. To handle others' emotions effectively, first recognize when they're acting against their own interests, a clear sign of emotional decision-making. Don't tell them to calm down, as this devalues their feelings and intensifies emotion. Instead, empathize and listen. Become their emotional confidant. A mother named Lisa Stevens demonstrated this perfectly when her 5-year-old daughter Aubrey fell and gashed her forehead. The hysterical child refused to go to the hospital, clinging desperately to the table. Lisa caught herself before joining the panic and decided to apply negotiation techniques instead. She approached her daughter gently, asking simple questions that established trust. Does mommy love you? Would mommy do anything to hurt you? This emotional approach began calming the child, creating space for rational discussion about the necessary hospital visit. Within 5 minutes, Aubrey let go of the table and walked to the car by herself. Effectively handling cultural differences has become a critical success factor in our increasingly interconnected world. Diamond challenges conventional understanding of diversity, arguing that differences between people aren't primarily about external factors like race, religion, or nationality. True diversity stems from where people derive their identity, their perceived psychological affiliation, rather than superficial characteristics. Cultural differences can exist between departments in the same company, residents of different cities, or members of different professions, affecting how they perceive and treat each other in negotiations and other interactions. Diamond explores the origins of cultural stereotypes, attributing them to ignorance, fear, and ancient tribal instincts where strangers were deemed risky. He challenges participants in his workshops to prove their stereotypes, highlighting the absurdity of generalized claims. To navigate cultural differences effectively, start by truly communicating with others and understanding their signals. When someone makes relationship signals by discussing non-business topics, they're assessing trustworthiness, and you must genuinely engage, not just pay lip service. Second, acknowledge differences openly and honestly, like consultant Donna Farrow, who directly addressed clients' misgivings about her age and gender. Crucially, you shouldn't try to be like others from different cultures. They don't expect it, and it leads to cultural fatigue. Instead, respect their differences while being authentically yourself. Understanding how people from different cultures interpret actions is crucial. Diamond describes a fascinating study of cross-cultural smile misinterpretations. While Americans exchange smiles as friendly gestures, a Korean student perceived American smiling as superficial, while Americans viewed the Koreans' lack of smile as unfriendly. An Arab student interpreted smiles directed at his traditional clothing as ridicule rather than approval. Most strikingly, when an American woman smiled at a Southeast Asian father with his children, he misunderstood it as solicitation. These examples demonstrate how even the simplest nonverbal communication can create profound misunderstandings across cultures. The solution requires understanding others' perceptions, moving incrementally across cultural divides, and providing visual experiences rather than just data. Cultural norms can be overcome through third parties, reframing standards, and understanding perceptions. Diamond shares how Dina, an Indian student, successfully negotiated out of an arranged marriage. By validating her mother's feelings instead of arguing, enlisting her more accommodating father as an ally, introducing her chosen partner naturally, and remaining emotionally controlled throughout, Dina eventually won her parents' blessing. The most important thing, Dina reflected, was using negotiation tools in a structured way. Preparation, role reversal, and emotional discipline allowed her to achieve what millions of women desire but cannot accomplish. The best negotiators are problem solvers who find creative ways to solve both their own and others' problems, turning obstacles into opportunities. The comprehensive Getting More model, also called the Four Quadrant model, developed over 20 years and used successfully worldwide by thousands of students, clients, and even U.S. Special Operations Forces who report it saves lives, organizes 12 key negotiation strategies into a structured approach. The model structures negotiations through four quadrants: problems and goals, situation analysis, option/risk reduction, and actions. The first quadrant identifies goals, problems, parties involved, consequences of no deal, and preparation levels. The second analyzes needs, perceptions, communication styles, and standards. The third explores options, incremental steps, third parties, framing, and alternatives. The fourth determines best options, presentation strategy, process management, commitments, and next steps. Rather than focusing on BATNA, best alternative to a negotiated agreement, which often leads people to walk away too quickly, Diamond suggests considering WATNA, worse alternative, and all possible outcomes between best and worst. The model challenges conventional concepts like bargaining range, showing how creative negotiators can expand options beyond money through trading items of unequal value. Preparation is crucial. An unprepared negotiator is like an amateur race car driver in the Indianapolis 500. Sometimes you may even need to help the other party prepare, as getting more works best as a transparent rather than manipulative process. The model emphasizes collecting information about perceptions, pictures in their heads, communication styles, and standards used for decisions. A powerful application of the model is conducting simulated negotiations beforehand, where the problem owner plays the other side's role. This role reversal provides deep insights into the other party's perceptions and likely responses. The simulation should involve at least two people per side to facilitate brainstorming, with everyone having the same facts. After preparing separately for 45 to 90 minutes, the sides negotiate their roles, then reflect on insights gained. This process has resolved conflicts ranging from corporate deals worth hundreds of millions to government subsidy disputes and personal disagreements. The model also helps identify process issues that cause recurring problems and determines the right counterparts for negotiations. Your attitude directly impacts negotiation outcomes. Adversarial negotiators make about half as many deals and get half as much from the deals they make, roughly 25% of what's possible. Don't negotiate when you're in a bad mood. Your credibility is your most valuable asset, more important than expertise, connections, or intelligence. Rather than trying to act differently, learn to be yourself better. Be transparent about your tendencies. If aggressive, warn people. If accommodating, acknowledge you might give too much. Admit cultural unfamiliarity or relationship tensions openly. This transforms potential conflicts into collaborative opportunities. In the real world, big, bold moves typically scare people away. Small, incremental steps accomplish more, especially when parties are far apart. These steps allow others to build confidence gradually, reducing perceived risk. The baseball analogy illustrates this perfectly. A .280 hitter who gets just one extra hit every 9 games becomes a .31 hitter, Hall of Fame caliber, with $10 million more in annual compensation. Knowledge alone is insufficient. You must apply these tools in real time. The world has many great negotiation thinkers who have read books and taken courses, but few great negotiators who can execute successfully in the moment. A negotiation ends when you decide it's over, not before. Keep asking and stay focused on your goals regardless of how many rejections you receive. If questioned about your persistence, simply explain you're trying to meet your goals and ask how you could do better. Diego Achetto called Delta 13 times before getting a $150 change fee waived. Students consistently report that learning effective negotiation changes their lives, bringing confidence, problem-solving skills, greater control, more money, and peace of mind. Carol McDermott's experience demonstrates typical results. In one semester, she secured $45,000 more at work, recovered bank fees, obtained airline compensation, negotiated cable discounts, convinced a restaurant to serve after hours, repaired friendships, and improved her emotional control during negotiations. As Alexei Lugovsov, now a Merrill Lynch trader, put it, "The negotiations course divided my life into two parts, before the course and after the course, enabling a happier life, more successful career, and better relationships."